Hello and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, episode 118. I'm your host, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is this week's special guest co-host, Player One Podcast's very own CJ, Chris Johnston.
Hey Chris, thanks for having me back. It's great to be on Power Pros.
Sure thing. I'm always glad to have you back. Of course, once again, we are here to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. We have some new releases to discuss, some cool news to talk about, and then we have our big topic for the week, which is the third anniversary of the release of Nintendo's Amiibo. Yeah, believe it or not, it's been more than 3 years since Amiibo came out, and so we are going to be discussing that in depth later on in the show. However, before we get to that, let's kick things off by talking about the recently released new DLC for The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. This is, of course, the second part of the Breath of the Wild Season Pass. This is the content known as the Champion's Ballad. CJ, have you picked this up, and have you started playing it yet?
I did pick it up.
All right.
I downloaded it immediately after the Game Awards,
cool.
And I was traveling at the time, so I had to pair my Switch to my iPad's cellular connection to download it, and it took longer than I would have liked, and it was late at night, and I played about 5 minutes of it, died immediately. I went back to the first area.
Oh, the Shrine of Resurrection.
Shrine of Resurrection, yes. And grabbed the little tuning fork weapon, the one-hit whatever, whatchamacallit.
Oh, the one-hit obliterator, yes. That's what happens.
The one-hit whatchamacallit is what I'd like to call it, really.
Yeah.
And
that's like a candelabra.
It's huge. It's huge. And went to the first little area of enemies and quickly died and shut the game off for the night, and I went back to Xenoblade Chronicles 2.
For now.
I really want to get back to this, though, because I love Breath of the Wild, and I was really looking forward to more story stuff, so I'm interested in playing it. I assume that you've played more than I have.
I have indeed. I haven't finished it yet. I was kind of hoping I'd be able to finish it within a day or two, but it was more extensive than I thought. And I also have been continuing to play Xenoblade Chronicles 2, so that's also been keeping me occupied. But yeah, let me run down a little bit of what you have not encountered yet so far. So yes, the first thing you do is, if you're following this new story content, is you go and get this one-hit obliterator weapon, and it's great because it will kill any enemy in one hit, but also it drains all your health out, so then you will also die in one hit. So you really have to be, you know, super stealthy as you go around these four enemy encampments and wipe out the enemies, and it can be a super harrowing experience. I mean, I was on the edge of my seat the entire time.
And you can't switch out weapons, right? You have to always use the one-hit obliterator?
Right. That is exactly correct.
Okay.
But if you're sneaky and stealthy and, you know, make sure to save a lot, it's not too bad. So you take out all these enemies in one of these spots, and then a brand new shrine pops out of the ground. And then you go into the shrine. Again, you can only survive one hit, so if there's combat involved, the shrines can be pretty challenging too. But some of them are just, you know, puzzles. Instead.
Okay.
So you do that, you clear the shrine, you do manage to get additional orbs, so you can finally, you know, start leveling up your abilities again, you know, try to fill in those last few missing hearts you might have. But yeah, you do that, you complete these four new shrines, and then after that, what happens is the one-hit obliterator self-obliterates and goes to four other locations in the world map, because all that stuff, you know, takes place in the Great Plateau, and you can't really leave the Great Plateau while you're doing it. Otherwise, you have to come back and you know, continue the challenge later.
Okay.
But so then that happens, and if you go to one of these four locations, you'll meet up with Cass, and he'll tell you a little story, and then you will see pictures of three new locations. So then you go to these three new locations, you complete a little challenge there, you find another shrine, and then once you complete those three challenges per location, then you have to fight a boss, a variant of one of the bosses you defeated inside the Divine Beasts. So, all told, there are at least 12 new champion shrines and four new bosses, and that's all following the obliterator stuff. And I'm somewhere in the middle of that. I have completed all of the challenges involving Revali, and I'm in the middle of hunting down the shrines associated with Mipha.
Okay.
But what happens beyond that, I don't really know. Because Nintendo has already talked about, I know that somewhere at the end you get like a crazy looking awesome horse motorcycle or something.
That thing looks great.
Yeah.
And I love the promo art. Looks like the Akira
yeah.
box art. It's so great.
Yeah, totally. But beyond that, I don't know. Is there like, you know, a super shrine you have to go through to get that? Because I know they were talking about, you know, a whole new dungeon.
Mm.
But, you know, so far we've already encountered, you know, 16 new shrines. So is there a bigger dungeon beyond that? And does the Obliterator come back? And I know the Obliterator is, you know, super overpowered. But by this point in the game, you're going to be at like the very end. And because it means you can only survive one hit yourself, it doesn't seem super duper overpowered, like you shouldn't be able to go out and use this thing.
Right.
You know, I could see it, you know, totally making encounters against Lytles be just a joke. But still, I think by this point, you've probably earned it if that were to be an option. I have no idea if it is or not.
Hmm. Interesting.
But yeah, I certainly feel like there is a lot of content just in this Champions Ballad story of the DLC. And of course, after you defeat each boss, then you get a new cutscene story segment showing Zelda and the champion from 100 years in the past that shed some light on those relationships. So that's interesting and cool to see.
Are they better than the cutscenes from the full game? I don't know about you, but I didn't really like the flashbacks that were in Breath of the Wild to begin with. I didn't really connect with the story there.
Well, I didn't have any problem with those. I kind of like them. And these, I think they're probably a step up above those, but they're not a whole lot different. They're very similar in feel and tone.
Okay.
It'll be interesting to see what you think, since you didn't like the other stuff.
Hmm.
But I certainly enjoyed the one I've seen so far.
Okay.
But then, beyond this you know, new story content with the cutscenes and the bosses and all that, there are also 11 new items strewn across 6 side quests that you can do. And I did all that stuff before I started in on the actual, you know, Champions Ballad story, because I thought, well, maybe these will come in useful. Maybe I'll need some of these abilities. So I did all that stuff, and I have managed to track down all 3 parts of the Royal Guard gear, all 3 parts of the Ganon outfit, plus the ancient bridle and saddle, as well as Rovio's hood, Zant's helmet, and the infamous Wind Waker lobster t-shirt.
Nice. The Ravio hood is maybe my favorite piece of gear that was in the trailer for this.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Yep, nothing like running around with a big purple bunny head on your head.
Exactly. I did hear from people who had collected like all of the armor prior to this DLC, they're having some issue collecting all of the new stuff. Apparently, Nintendo didn't add enough slots for it if you had everything that was available up to now.
So, really?
Yeah. Hmm. But they'll probably fix that. I'm sure they'll patch that. But
yeah, I don't have everything, I guess. I'm probably still missing a couple bits of monster equipment that you get from, you know, what's his name with the monster trading and the balloon and that
mm-hmm,
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a couple things I'm missing there, but I have just about everything else, including, you know, all the amiibo gear and all the DLC, and I didn't encounter any problems. So
okay.
If that is an issue, maybe they've already resolved it or something. I'm not sure.
Okay.
The Royal Guard gear was really hard to get because it is all hidden in Hyrule Castle, so in the final dungeon, basically.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, you know, it's sending you back in there. And, of course, you know, I knew it. I was familiar with it this time, so it wasn't quite as bad as my first time through, but it was still challenging. Mm. And, you know, spoiler alert for anyone who doesn't want to know where the last piece of gear is, it is actually in the same room where you fight Ganon at the very end of the game.
Really?
Instead of going into the hall to fight him, you have to climb to the top, and it's, like, on top of Hyrule Castle. Yeah.
You have to climb up to the top while Ganon is there? No.
No. You do it before you actually go in and fight him.
Oh, okay.
Instead of going in, just like hop over the wall and climb up the side.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, it's like, it's literally above the Ganon fight.
That's super cool,
so,
though.
It is. And I'd never gone to the top of Hyrule Castle before, so that gave me an excuse to go up to the very top and look over all of the Hyrule countryside. And also, there is a Korok up there at the very, very top of Hyrule Castle that I never got. So that was all good to see.
Wow. Yeah. Now, I don't know if you've run into this, but it has been a few months since I played Breath of the Wild, and you know, I loaded up the game when the Champions Amiibos came out, and you know, got the chests from those, but I haven't really gone back to play the game very much, and I kind of feel like when I do, I'm going to be rusty at the mechanics of the game. You know, back in March, April, when the game was out, I was a natural at it.
That's understandable.
But now I fear that my skills have atrophied. Did you experience any of that?
I don't really feel that I did. I was kind of worried about that as well. But I think by going on all the side quests and finding that stuff first, instead of throwing myself right into the one-hit obliterator quest, I think that might have helped knock some of the rust off, if there was any.
Okay.
So you might want to do that and you know, do some of these other exploration-based quests before going into that new story content. That might help.
That is a pro tip. I will do that.
Another thing I want to mention is that I was kind of worried about the quest for getting the ancient bridle and ancient saddle, because you know, one of the few things I have not done in Breath of the Wild is get some of the extra horse gear, because it's attached to these really tough riding challenges. There's an obstacle course that I never completed properly, and there's a shooting range I never completed properly. And I was worried that these would have something to do with those, but it's just a you know, hunt down the treasure chest and find it kind of quest. So you don't have to do any sort of crazy, insane horse riding skills to be able to get this gear. I was happy to see that.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, mostly everything is like the first batch of DLC, where it just involves following a bunch of clues from one place to another and contemplating the hints and understanding them and then tracking down the treasure chest. So it's all good fun stuff.
All right.
Yeah, overall, you know, taking all as a whole and thinking, you know, this stuff all cost me an extra $20, even though I haven't finished it yet, I'm leaning towards totally worth it.
Yeah, I think, you know, the trial thing that we got during the summer, even though I haven't completed it, it seems like that's a nice meaty challenge. And then this stuff seems like it's a nice extra bonus, certainly worth the $20.
Mm-hmm. And it's challenging, too.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yep, that is my assessment as well. Glad that they have included this stuff to, you know, get me back into this game, because I've been so busy with, you know, other games recently, with Fire Emblem and with Mario and with Xenoblade, that now it's like, oh, well, here's a reason to fire up Zelda and keep playing that again. And I mean, I still have like, you know, 600 Koroks to find also, so I could just be playing it for that reason. But yeah, I'm glad to have something really meaty to sink my teeth into.
Yeah.
Good fun.
Same, and I'm glad that they were able to release it this year. I know there was some question, since we hadn't heard anything and the Champions Amiibos were already out, whether it was going to make this year. I think the announcement at the Game Awards was a nice little capper to the year.
Well, they had said prior to that it was still coming somewhere in December. I think they had just said that like the month prior. So I was expecting it. But yeah, then it did kind of just come right out of nowhere during the awards. Like, it's here. It's available, you know, tonight. So that was pretty cool.
I love those kinds of surprises. Like, it's available now. Go download it. I love that.
I will say, the one thing that I feel like is missing from this DLC is some closer connection to those new Champions Amiibo, because it's you know, the Champions Ballad, we have those new Amiibo. So I thought, well, maybe there'll be something extra in this DLC aside from just getting those new helmets that you get when you scan the Amiibo. But unfortunately, there's not. But, you know, whatever. Can't have everything, I guess.
True.
Moving on from Zelda to another game I've been playing. It just came out yesterday, and that is the Switch platformer, The End Is Nigh. This is a fun, challenging, post-apocalyptic platformer from the creator of Super Meat Boy. It is all about you know, trying to make your way through these hardcore, challenging platforming levels as you try to make a friend. I mean that literally. He's trying to find the body parts to make a friend
That's amazing.
Out of other dead people in this post-apocalyptic world.
Wow.
Are you familiar with this game? Have you picked it up by any chance?
I have not picked it up. You know, super hard platformers, I just can't do. I feel, you know, I picked up Super Meat Boy when that first came out back on the Xbox 360 and played a lot of it, or a fair bit of it anyway. And I just, super hard platforming challenges, just for the sake of them being super hard platforming challenges, I just can't get into. So, you know, I'm always interested to see what Edmund McMullen is doing, but this game is not for me. This is for somebody else.
I can certainly understand where you're coming from, but I did have quite a good time with this one. The general play mechanics of just, you know, grabbing onto ledges and hooks and you know, using those to overcome the obstacles and, you know, spring through these. Basically, each stage is, you know, sort of like a one-screen platforming puzzle, because it's not just getting from A to B, it's figuring out how to get from A to B, you know, and doing it without splattering yourself all over the landscape. there's a very, very cerebral component going on here, and that's pretty cool. And there's also lots of secrets strewn throughout the game. But the nice thing is you do have infinite lives, and every time you get to another screen, you know, that's a checkpoint. So you can try again. And if you get so fed up that you're ready to hurl your switch across the room, you can stop, you can save. And when you come back, you'll be in that very same room. You don't lose any progress. And so you can just pick up from there anytime you're getting too stressed out.
And restarts are quick, right? They're just like Meat Boy, where it's not even a second waiting.
Right. Exactly. That's no good. Load times or anything. You just die, you explode, you reappear right there at the edge of the screen.
Nice.
And let me tell you, in addition to possibly making me, you know, a better platforming player, this has also taught me new and creative ways to invent and string together expletives. I am becoming an expletive artist, possibly an expletive genius from playing this game, because you will die. You will die. You will die again. You will die in the stupidest ways possible. And, you know, you'll be like trying to get through a level, and suddenly you will find new ways to die in this level that you didn't even think was possible. You know, you'll start off and, oh, there's a spike, like right there, right at the very beginning of that stage. I didn't see it before. Oh, I jumped into a spike over my head just from, you know, hitting the button. Oh my gosh. After getting through like the first three stages, I think that's, you know, 60 different screens. I think I died like 150 times.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
This is the kind of game where I love watching it on Games Done Quick. And watching somebody else like do it perfectly, that's always impressive to watch. I know I can't do it. I've got old man hands, and I just can't do the precision platforming anymore.
Yeah, it is definitely challenging. It's definitely not for everybody, and it's definitely not for kids. The game is rated M, even though the presentation is, you know, super cute and also black and white. Yeah, the game, there's also, you know, plenty of swearing in that right off the bat, you know, within the game itself, perfectly setting the stage for, you know, me wanting to, you know, swear up a storm after finally playing the game. So
nice.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely earns that M rating, I think. Like I said, it's not for everybody, but if you like challenging platforms that will let you show your skills, then this is for you. For others, it might just be an exercise in frustration and swearing.
Nice.
Also, I almost forgot to mention, the soundtrack, which is all rock versions of classical music compositions, is absolutely phenomenal. Personally, I'm really enjoying the game so far.
All right.
Meanwhile, over on the Nintendo 3DS, I've been playing a little game called 80s Overdrive. And this game is, you know, really totally an homage to classic, you know, 2D style racing games like Outrun and, to a lesser extent, you know, Rad Racer. The main difference is, of course, it's on modern technology. It's in, you know, stereoscopic 3D, which is great. And, you know, it really takes me back to those olden days in the arcades when you're playing stuff, you know, like those Sega arcade classics. I know that you've been playing this a little bit as well. What do you think of it so far?
I have been playing it. I like it, especially the graphics. Mm-hmm. You know, it's got kind of like a very arcadey sort of amber tones, as if, you know, the display that you're playing on is sort of washed out a bit. It just has that feel, that very nostalgic old feel. It's almost like a sepia tone, really, in the interface, which I like. And so yeah,
before you move on, one thing about the interface that I love is that for some reason it uses a cursor instead of, you know, just, you know, pressing the button to go through the menus. And the cursor is a power glove, which is awesome.
Oh, I didn't notice that. Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, normally I was like, why is it using a cursor? This isn't an iOS game. It's not a computer game. Why am I moving a cursor around here? And then I realized it's a power glove. I'm like, okay, forget my complaints. This is awesome. Power glove. Plus, on top of that, you get to choose an icon for your save file, and there's one that looks exactly like Mr. T. I mean, anytime I get to create a character, I tend to make one that looks like Mr. T anyway. So for an 80s-themed game, and especially for me, this was perfect.
That is a great touch right there. I like that. Huh.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm enjoying it. It does remind me a lot of Rad Racer and Outrun and Road Blasters and Spy Hunter and all that sort of thing without the shooting.
Yeah, no shooting.
But they did add cops, which is interesting, an interesting mix to that mechanic.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure how much I like the cops. I mean, so far, they haven't been too much trouble for me. They come at you, they try to get in front of you, you just kind of dodge out of the way. And, you know, that's, you know, it's all right. It's all right. I can see it being really frustrating when they cause you to lose some of the harder races later on, but it's definitely interesting.
Yeah, and I started playing with the circle pad, and that was a mistake. It was a lot easier to control once I switched back to the digital pad. So
That's how I've been playing.
Yeah. Yeah, I should have done that from the beginning. I should have known that it would play better with the digital pad. But yeah, it's a neat little game, and the music is great too. And it looks like, from the sound select screen anyway, that these are tunes that are, you know, real artists. And it's not just chip tunes, because they've got like a CD cover, but I may be totally wrong in that. It may just be for aesthetics that they're doing that.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I assumed it was just an aesthetic choice that they had each artist with their own CD cover, but maybe you're right. Maybe they are taken from somewhere else and didn't originate in the game. They definitely have a European feel to them. You can tell that this game was made in Europe. They're a little more techno than, you know, like the 80s tracks you would associate with Outrun and Rad Racer and games like that that let you choose the soundtrack that was playing. But still, having that selection of 13 tracks is definitely cool.
Yeah, definitely. And I like the ability to power up your car and buy nitro. Mm-hmm. It adds a little bit to the regular arcade gameplay of something like Outrun. And the stages themselves are, you know, a nice length. Nothing overstays its welcome. It seems like a very neat, quick play game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got lots of cool stuff that's reminiscent of those old games, like, you know, having these cars that are, you know, clearly inspired by Ferraris and DeLoreans and Lamborghinis. And that's all great. But then it does take that extra step with the career mode, where you earn money, you buy those upgrades, you can buy new cars, but then on the downside, you have to pay an entrance fee for each race, you have to pay for damage caused to your car, you have to pay for fuel, so it's a very interesting balance going on with that. Apparently, if you do really poorly and you run out of money, you have to do some mini game washing people's cars, but I have not actually encountered that myself yet.
I almost want to go in and lose a whole bunch just to try that.
Yeah, I kind of want to see that as well.
Huh.
So there's that, and it's, you know, a pretty in-depth mode, but right now I'm still pretty early on because I'm trying to save up money to get some better cars before I start upgrading, so I haven't made quite as much progress as I would have liked.
Yeah, I did notice that if you bump another car or something, you really lose the pack quickly.
Yeah, that is... a couple things are different from these classic arcade games. First of all, I was expecting that when you hit something, you know, the car would, like, you know, do 14 flips and then you'd recover and get in the car and just keep going. Mm-hmm. In this, you come to just a total dead stop. And then once you start going again, it's really hard to catch up. There is no rubber band AI, at least as far as anything that benefits you. It can be really, really hard. One crash can just mess up everything. And so far, it's even more challenging in time trials mode. Like, I just have played the first race. I'm only using the stock car. It doesn't have anything powered up. I don't have any nitros or anything. I don't even think you can use nitros in time trial mode. But, you know, it's just like the classic arcade games. You're trying to get to the checkpoints. And, you know, then there's a branching path. And then you keep going. But even though I've made these perfect runs, I haven't crashed, I haven't even had to put on my brakes, I still can't get past the first stinking checkpoint.
Oh, wow.
And either it's because I'm using an automatic transmission and it really wants me to use a manual, or maybe I have to upgrade to a better car or something. I don't know. But yeah, that mode is really tough for me so far. Now, have you used the track editor very much?
I have not. I've not even gone in there. Must confess that I really never use track editors or level editors of any kind in most games, unless it's Mario Maker, then I have, but yeah.
Well, I have to say, this really isn't a track editor in the traditional sense, because you don't really design the course layout, but it does let you make extensive customization for, you know, just doing a quick run on any kind of level of your choice. So you get to choose from 7 level themes, and then you adjust all these sliders to increase the number of turns, severity of turns, number of hills, severity of hills, amount of traffic, police presence, and all that stuff. So it's certainly not the same as a real track editor where you make the layout, but it is kind of a cool way to make something that's you know, uniquely your own and to enjoy that for a quick race.
Now, can you share these out to other people, or
yes, you can.
Okay.
Because it is so simple, made with all these sliders, there's a password associated with any track that you make, and it appears right there on the screen. You can easily, you know, share it online or any other way that you want. So, yep, you can totally share them.
Awesome.
With very little trouble. Yeah, it's just like, you know, typing up a Metroid password from back in the day or something like that.
Justin Bailey, yes.
I haven't tried that yet. That'd be funny to see if it works. But yeah, if you want, you can have just a completely straight course where you're doing nothing but dodging traffic, or you can have a course that's full of turns and hills and the police are on your butt all the time. So yeah, it's kind of a neat option. I'm not sure it's totally necessary, but I'm not going to complain it's there.
Okay.
Anyway, I think is a pretty nifty throwback to those kinds of racing games. So if you have fond memories of playing OutRun or Rad Racer or whatnot, it's a pretty cool game to check out, and it is available in the 3DS eShop for only $10. That's all the games I wanted to talk about this week. Let's move along to a little bit of news. So first of all, in the news, we had the Game Awards just a few days ago. And so first and foremost, I wanted to say congratulations to Nintendo for taking home quite a number of those awards.
Woohoo!
Breath of the Wild came in with Game of the Year. It also won its category award. Super Mario Odyssey won Best Family Game. And Metroid Samus Returns won Best Handheld Game.
Very deserving, all of those.
Yeah, totally, totally. Yeah, and you know, some years the handheld category is like nothing but actual, you know, like mobile phone stuff. So this year I was glad to see it go to a 3DS game. That was cool.
Indeed. And I was very surprised, actually, that Breath of the Wild took the crown. I was convinced that PUBG was going to take it because of how popular that game is. But I was very pleased to see Breath of the Wild get it because that's my own personal game of the year. So.
Yeah, I wasn't watching the award, so I didn't really know what it was up against. But certainly, Breath of the Wild is a well-deserved choice, and you know, I'm very happy for it.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And for Nintendo to have two games in the running for Game of the Year was big as well. Super Mario Odyssey, of course, was also nominated in that category, along with Nier and Horizon Zero Dawn and Persona 5 and PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. So it was a fierce competition this year.
Yeah, beat out some pretty big games.
Yeah.
Of course, there was more than just the awards at the Game Awards, ironically enough. There was also some news, and that is that Bayonetta 1, 2, and 3 are all coming to Nintendo Switch. CJ, what are your thoughts on this?
This is fantastic. This is great news because, you know, a lot of people missed out on Bayonetta 2 on the Wii U, and it's fantastic that we're basically getting a collection and a brand new game on the Switch. So that's, it's fantastic news. I wasn't sure what they were going to do because they did a separate trailer for 1 and 2 and then 3, but this is fantastic news for fans of Platinum.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And, you know, I wasn't really sure what we were going to be getting with Nintendo in the early months of 2018, and it looks like, at least in February, that's when Bayonetta 1 and 2 are going to be coming out. We're going to get Bayonetta 2 released as a physical cartridge, and then if you buy that, you get the download of Bayonetta 1 for free. That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Of course, if you were to buy them digitally, you can buy them separately, and the pricing structure is really wonky, but it's still basically the same thing.
Okay.
Then, as far as Bayonetta 3 goes, they didn't show anything on the game. They just had a big teaser and a 3... And we know it's on the way. We know it's going to be exclusive to Switch. That's about all we know at this time. But, you know, we'll have those other games in the meanwhile for us to enjoy as we wait for Bayonetta 3 to hit.
Yeah, I think that's enough. Just knowing that a third game is coming is good for fans of the series, for sure. And I guess there's special editions in other territories that offer a physical edition of Bayonetta 1 as well.
Yes, there definitely are special editions. Nothing they've announced for North America yet, but nope. yeah, the other territories seem to be getting them. Mm-hmm. Guess we'll have to see if that happens here.
Yep.
I mean, I guess, you know, Europe is largely responsible for Bayonetta being the top voted character that got into Smash Brothers. So I guess that's pretty huge over there.
Yeah.
So, I guess it's understandable that they would be getting a special edition there. Yeah. I admit, I'm not super enthusiastic about getting a lot of Wii U ports onto Switch. You know, I felt like, you know, after we got Mario Kart 8 and some of the other stuff we got, you know, that was kind of enough. But, you know, Bayonetta is definitely a game that deserves a wider audience, so I think I'm cool with it happening.
Third time's a charm.
Right, absolutely. As for other exciting upcoming Switch games, one that I am super thrilled about is Street Fighter 30th Anniversary Collection. It is coming out in May of next year, 2018. It's going to get a physical and digital release, and it's going to be available for $39.99, and it is chock full of Street Fighter goodness. 12 games in total.
That's a lot of games. I feel bad now that I bought Ultra Street Fighter 2 back in May 2017, because just a year later, we get a 30th Anniversary Collection with a lot more games, and in the format that I want. So, yeah.
Well, it certainly seems like Ultra Street Fighter 2 is not a very good value after seeing this. I'm still not regretting the purchase or anything, but yeah, there is a lot of great content here. It's got the original Street Fighter, which is terrible.
Yes.
Then it has Street Fighter 2, Street Fighter 2 Champion Edition, Street Fighter 2 Hyper Fighting, Super Street Fighter 2, Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo, Street Fighter Alpha 1, 2, and 3, and then Street Fighter 3, as well as its follows-up, Street Fighter 3 Second Impact and Third Strike. So if you're a fan of Capcom's, you know, 2D fighting games, I mean, this is like, you know, absolute heaven. These are some of the best fighting games ever made.
Yeah, you know, 20 years ago or however long it's been, 30 years ago, would you have imagined that you'd be playing Street Fighter on a handheld machine? Like, it's amazing. This is a great collection. And I don't think they said anything about other special features, right? Just the games, but...
Well, they have... A bit. There's a huge art gallery. They've shown lots of concept sketches are going to be included in that. Of course, a music player. So there's going to be you know, quite a variety of extra goodies in there, just like there was with Ultra Street Fighter 2, but this would be even more extensive, you know, because this includes the Alpha games and the Street Fighter 3 games. Yep. So just a whole lot more opportunity to include a whole bunch of extra goodies there for fans.
I would like to see video content about the series, too. I mean, art galleries and all that stuff, that's great, but I'd like to hear more about, you know, going from the original Street Fighter to Street Fighter 2.
Yeah, and it's true. A documentary could be really cool.
Making all of the decisions that they made on the upgrades and new characters and characters they didn't use, maybe. And it'd just be interesting because this is such a unique series. It's been around for so long that there have to be stories that we have not heard. And I really would like to hear those. So,
yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, it doesn't sound like there's going to be anything like that in this collection, but there is certainly plenty of opportunity for them to put that there if they wanted to. Yeah, I mean, this is a game where they could probably do some sort of, you know, crazy special edition and people would eat it up like crazy.
Yeah.
Also included will be online play for some but not all of the games. So there will be full-fledged online modes for Street Fighter 2 Hyper Fighting, Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo, Street Fighter Alpha 3, and Street Fighter 3 Third Strike. So all the ones that are probably most competitively played by players, you know, still today, all of those are getting, you know, the full on online treatment. It's kind of too bad the other ones aren't, but, you know, that's, you know, still four great fighting games that are going to have extensive online features included.
Sure. And they really didn't have to waste their time doing the original Street Fighter online because that would have just, wasted
right,
effort.
Right.
So.
Yep. Yep. That one is definitely not needed. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense that they picked the ones they picked. But, you know, my personal all-time favorite fighting game is Street Fighter Alpha 2. I just found that to be, you know, the perfect balance. I didn't really care for the isms that were added in Street Fighter Alpha 3. I'm not sure there's anything wrong with them, but I preferred keeping it simple and not having to worry about that in Street Fighter Alpha 2. I love the character selection. I love that it has, you know, alpha counters and super combos and those custom combos. And, you know, I thought it just came together really, really well. So, You know, I kind of wish that there was an online component for that one just because it is my absolute favorite. But really, I'm just thrilled that we are going to be able to be playing these games once again. I mean, I was literally like a couple hours before they announced this, I was sitting there thinking, man, I wish Capcom would do some sort of Street Fighter Alpha collection and then put it on Switch. Some seriously, they could have done this as three separate games. They could have done an Alpha collection, a Street Fighter 2 collection, and a Street Fighter 3 collection all at the same price, and I would have bought all three of them. Doing it all in one collection, 12 games, A, that saves me a lot of money, and B, it's just full of awesome. So I am super thrilled about this.
Yeah, this is a great package.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, been 20 years since the Street Fighter Alpha series came out, but yeah, even now, I still love it. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
The other new announcement that just popped up on my radar is the Rocket League Collector's Edition. Rocket League came out not too long ago on Switch, but now we found out there is a physical version that's coming out on January 16th. Are you a Rocket League player? Are you going to get this one? Are you a fan?
I have already purchased it digitally. I am all digital on Switch, so physical version sounds good, but is totally not for me. But I love the game, and it's one of the games I play a lot on the Switch. I never really got into it when it was on PS4 and PC, but I played a lot of the game on a couple of flights that I took recently and played against bots and had a hell of a time. It was great.
Yeah, I still have yet to really get into it. You know, maybe this version will be the one. You know, this includes the game, it includes lots of DLC, and apparently it also includes a bonus art print. So, you know, if you are a big fan, that might be a reason to pick it up, even if you already have it in other formats. The game is going to be $39.99.
That's a pretty good deal for all that DLC that the game has. So, yeah, that's good.
I guess, although they did point out that this is $10 more than what you would pay if you were getting it on other consoles, and they say that is due to the manufacturing costs of putting a game on a Switch cartridge as opposed to just a disc like with other systems.
Okay.
Regardless, it's still pretty cool to see that coming out just next month. Why don't we move along from here and answer a little bit of listener mail. Our first letter comes from B. Lugosi, who writes, "My favorite third-party game on the GameCube, along with Resident Evil 4, is Eternal Darkness, Sanity's Requiem. I revere this game as much as I do Nintendo's AAA titles, but to play it I have to boot up the Wii and use my GameCube controller. I have long since given up on any hope of a sequel, but do you think the sublime game will ever come to the Switch?"
I think it kind of depends what Nintendo is going to do with their classic games on the Switch and going forward. I don't know what you think about Virtual Console, but I think my hunch, my feeling is that Virtual Console is dead and that we will maybe be getting games one by one. It would be fantastic to get GameCube games, and of course Eternal Darkness is a lot of people's favorite, or on their top 10 list, of course, including myself. I really like Eternal Darkness, Sanity's Requiem. I got the chance to review the game for Electronic Gaming Monthly back in the day.
Oh, wow.
And I interviewed Dennis Dyack for a post-launch interview that we called Afterthoughts back in EGM.
Uh-huh.
It's in the September... Wait, let me double check. Yeah, September 2002 issue, if you want to track that down. issue number 158. And it's an interview with Dennis Dyack where I asked about some of the questions you might have after you're done playing. So we did a lot of preview coverage, but there were topics that we couldn't broach because they were spoiler filled or otherwise. So that was a fun interview, and I think I talked to him for like an hour and only used a portion of what we discussed in the magazine. I wish I had the audio recording of that, but the game is definitely great. I haven't played it in a long time. I'm not sure how well it holds up, but I would love to play it again. It is one of my favorite GameCube games. I remember playing at E3, they had the N64 version way back when it was an N64 game. And I remember...
Probably alongside Cameo or something.
Exactly. I remember going off... or Dinosaur Planet or something. And I remember going up to the kiosk and it had like crazy slowdown, and it was just awful. And I was so happy when it was brought to GameCube and actually looked like a good game.
Well, that's cool. That's neat to hear. Personally, I have not really had a chance to play that game much. I've only just played a little bit, and I hardly remember anything about it. I do want to issue a correction, though. He called it a third-party game. It actually is a first-party game, so it is fully Nintendo-owned.
That's true.
Don't have to worry about the rights being owned by anybody else. So if Nintendo wanted to bring it out, they totally could. And I think they even, you know, like re-upped the copyright a couple of years ago.
They did. And every time that comes up, I'm expecting some kind of re-release. And it so far has not happened, but maybe this time. Maybe this time's the one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's still been a few years since it last happened, but I'm kind of in agreement with you. It's kind of weird that we don't really know what's going on with Virtual Console, and it seems like a lot of Virtual Console is going to be tied to their new online service, especially when it comes to the 8-bit games. But I do think they will finally give an opportunity for people to download full, complete GameCube games sometime during the Switch's life cycle. And I've got to believe that that will include Eternal Darkness. So I don't necessarily see it happening anytime soon, but I do think there's a good chance that we'll be getting that, you know, alongside, you know, Super Mario Sunshine and, you know, Wind Waker and all those other great GameCube games, you know, Luigi's Mansion and whatnot. So I think it'll happen eventually. I think Nintendo knows that there is demand for this stuff, and I think it will happen. It's just sort of a matter of not if, but when, in my opinion.
Yeah, and how are they going to do the sanity effects in this game? Because they can threaten to erase your GameCube memory card, but it's not going to be a GameCube memory card in that slot. And the TV volume thing isn't going to look like a TV volume thing in 2017 or 2018. So it may not be as effective as it once was.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I suppose they could, you know, change the GameCube memory thing to a Switch memory thing, but that's probably more trouble than it's worth.
Yeah.
But that is a good point. But still, I hope it does come out.
Yeah, especially since you had to play through it multiple times to get, like, the full ending. So, yeah, it'd be nice to have on a portable when you can boot it up and play a little when you have time.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, I've never really played it that much, so, you know, I get a chance to check out this classic I've kind of been missing out on.
Mm-hmm.
Our next letter comes from Brian Booth, and he writes, I wanted to share with my favorite gaming gurus that I'll finally be getting a Switch for Christmas along with Mario Odyssey, coinciding with a week and a half off of work. My biggest challenge will be fighting off the kids for a chance to play it. I'm also likely to get Sonic Mania and Rayman Legends pretty soon. I already have Breath of the Wild on the Wii U, and I don't have the time to sink into Skyrim or Xenoblade right now, but I was wondering if you have any other suggestions for something I can play with my kids or in short bursts on my own.
Splatoon 2, of course.
Yes, that is a great answer. That would be an excellent one.
Yeah, and the great thing about the Switch is that you have the multiple user profiles, so your kids can each have their own save and their own online profile, so that makes sharing with the kids easier, for sure.
Yeah, that's true. Obviously, Mario Kart 8 would be a good one to get if you don't already have that one, but I'm guessing that you probably do have that one on Wii U. But that aside, my other two choices would be Cave Story and Tiny Barbarian, both from Nicholas. Both of these games have had co-op modes added for their Switch release, and they're both, you know, really great, fun single-player games, but then you can also add in, you know, second player to join in and have fun with you in these versions. So I think they would be excellent choices. Tiny Barbarian is super, super hard, and I'm still not that far into the game, but I can imagine that for a younger kid, you know, being able to play it in co-op and use some of the features in co-op, like you can actually grab your friend's hand if they're having trouble making a jump. If you make it across a ledge, you can reach out and give them just a little bit extra to help get them across that ledge. That would be very useful for playing with younger gamers out there, I would imagine.
Yeah, and also Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle, I would suggest that. And they just introduced that new versus mode as well. That would be a fun game to play with the kids. It's a nice little introduction to strategy gaming.
Okay, cool. I don't think I even realized I had that mode.
Excellent. Yeah, they just added it about a week and a half ago or so.
All right, very cool.
Yeah.
All right, I think that takes care of the letters. So let's take an intermission, and then we come back. We'll discuss this week's big topic, which is 3 years of Amiibo. All right, we are back and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is 3 years of Amiibo.
Amiibo!
It was November 21st, 2014, when they came out alongside the latest version of Super Smash Bros. In those 3 years, we have had somewhere in the arena of 150 Amiibo figurines released. This includes the Smash Bros. Series Amiibo, this includes Mario Amiibo, Zelda Amiibo, Kirby, Animal Crossing, Fire Emblem, Yarn Yoshi. It includes a few that are exclusive to Japan, such as the Monster Hunter Story Series Amiibo and QB. And then, of course, beyond the figurines, there are also these cards from Animal Crossing and Mario Sports. We're not going to get into those here. We're going to be focusing on the figurines. But yeah, that is a lot of collectible Nintendo goodness released in just 3 years.
Indeed. And it's a serial now, too.
It's a serial. Wow.
Yeah.
Yes. Have you picked that up yet, by the way?
I have not.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet myself.
I have not gone looking for a box yet.
Yeah, I went out looking for it today, but didn't find it. I think the scalpers got to it first.
Probably.
But they did not get to my Amiibo because, yes, I am Amiibo figurine complete. Obviously, I am really enjoying these little interactive collectibles. I just think it's so fantastic to be able to have a single united line of basically all your favorite video game characters. And, you know, with the way they're adding third-party characters in Smash, I mean, you've got Nintendo not only with its, you know, super recognizable heroes like Mario and Link and Samus, but you're getting Sonic, you're getting Mega Man, you're getting Bayonetta, you're getting Ryu, you're getting Cloud. It's just so ridiculous that, you know, these things are coming out from Nintendo and they're all there in one line.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's great that they are usable in the games, but I just like them personally as collectibles. I think they look great on your shelf. The sculpting and the detail on them is pretty much second to none. So, you know, just to be able to have these all lined up is fantastic, in my opinion.
Yeah, I completely agree. I initially, when they came out, I went to Toys R Us on the day that they were out and bought a few. And I'm not even that big of a Smash Brothers player, actually. I just was buying them because they were Nintendo characters and they looked cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest reason as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and I've continued buying them for exactly that reason. Like, the functionality on them is almost secondary for me. Like, I really
for me, it totally is.
Yeah, I enjoy picking them up from the Nintendo franchises that I love the most, like Animal Crossing and Zelda and Mario. I just need to have those, even though I didn't buy Amiibo Festival at all.
I had to buy it because I needed to get the supposedly exclusive Amiibo that we're released with. I needed that version of Isabelle. Of course, then they, you know, released her separately later, and I felt like a doofus for buying that terrible, terrible game. But
yes.
Yeah, they sucker me. I was like all in. I'm still all in.
And I really like what they've been doing recently with the larger, more detailed Amiibos too. Like, that has just really extended the line and made it feel like you know, the premium toys that they are, and not just a sort of toys to life thing like other companies have done, but a real like collector's thing that you want on your shelf.
Yeah, absolutely. That's completely true. I have basically the exact same feeling personally. And the other thing I think that makes them better than other toys to life is that many of them have multiple uses. So it's not like you're just paying $12.99 so you can use Mario in this one game. I mean, there are probably like 20 games out there where you can use that Mario Amiibo that you got for Smash Brothers back on day one.
That's right. And Mario Maker, of course, had even more uses for all of your Amiibo.
Yeah, I mean, even games where you don't expect they would do anything, like, you know, Breath of the Wild, you can scan a Mario Amiibo and you'll get, you know, some sort of consumable item. It's not as good as you get from scanning a Zelda character, but still, it gets you something. So, in a way, a lot of these are like, you know, the gift that just keeps on giving.
Yeah, or even Hyrule Warriors, they give you a daily gift if you load up the game. Yeah, I love that functionality, actually. That's my favorite thing to come of Amiibos, to get all that stuff. And I have scanned plenty of Breath of the Wild Amiibos multiple times on the Switch.
Oh, yeah. Me too. So, I get the feeling that you're not as completely Amiibo figurine obsessed as I am, but how many of these things have you picked up so far? Do you know?
I have not done an official count, but I would imagine it's well over 50 I'm kind of looking at my shelf, and yeah, it seems like it's over 50 at this point.
I tallied all mine up. I have 153. I don't even want to think about doing the math about how much that means I've spent, but it's frightening. It's definitely frightening.
Yeah. I'm glad I didn't pay eBay prices or anything for some of the early Amiibo that sold out that I wanted, like the Wii Fit Trainer or Little Mac.
Yeah, most of these I was able to get at the store. I was able to get in pre-orders. But that Wave 4, man, that Wave 4 with Lucina and Robin and Pac-Man and Charizard, that was just terrible. That was the worst, especially with, you know, NES being a GameStop exclusive and lining up at GameStop and them, you know, selling out and their whole network crashing and having to line up for ages. Oh, that was a nightmare. So I did end up having to import those guys from that wave from Japan. But fortunately, that's pretty much the only one where I had to resort to that.
Somehow I was able to get two Pac-Man amiibo.
Actually, Pac-Man wasn't that hard to get.
I kept one in the box and I opened one and it's on my desk at work. Because
nice.
My Twitter handle is SuperPac and I really love Pac-Man games. So it was the perfect little collectible.
You know, I always wondered if that was the case, if that's why you had that handle. So now I know. No one's half the battle.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So to commemorate this 3-year anniversary, one thing I'd like us to do is go down our top 5 favorite amiibo. And CJ, why don't we start with you? And you don't need to put these in any specific order, but I would like to know just your top 5 favorites.
This was hard. Because, like I said, I have over 50, which, of course, is not as extreme as you have gotten with the amiibo. But it's tough to choose favorites, because, really, I've only been buying the ones of characters and series that I like. So, but I whittled it down to 5.
Okay.
In no particular order, because I can't pick favorites out of my plastic children here. we got the Metroid Samus Returns Samus. I love choice. That pose.
Yeah, it's a great pose. I love the sheen on the figure. I love the detail on the armor. That is a great one.
Yes. And I love that it's, you know, larger than the regular amiibo. It just makes that thing pop.
Mm-hmm.
The Pixel Mario, the modern style.
Ah, nice.
With the red and blue. I love that amiibo. It's just so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
Duck Hunt Dog.
Ah.
So, this is just the...
You mean Duck Hunt.
Well, it's okay, yeah.
Duck Hunt Dog.
You're right. It's the dog and the duck.
They should have called it Duck Hunt Duo. Just called Duck Hunt. That still bugs me, you know, later.
Duck Hunt Duo would have been good. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's what it's called in Europe, but the U.S. is just called Duck Hunt, which makes no sense.
Yeah, but I love that they did amiibo of some of their most obscure Smash Brothers trophies, like... That especially that set that came with 3 in the U.S. That was the GameStop exclusive that came with Rob, Duck Hunt, and Mr. Game & Watch.
Right, right.
Just a great set there. And of those, I really like the Duck Hunt amiibo the best because it just is a cartoony representation of those characters, and I happen to just love that. It looks great.
Mm-hmm. Yep, totally.
And then I got Captain Olimar. I think... that amiibo just looks awesome.
Yeah, I love that
one. And the plastic space helmet that he's got on, and the little amiibo walking with him, it just, it's a great...
You mean the little Pikmin that are walking?
Little Pikmin, sorry. I said amiibo, I meant Pikmin.
Yeah.
The little Pikmin that are walking with him, it's just a great little toy.
Yeah, I love that one. I know I've said it before, but it just looks like a little detailed, super hyper-detailed diorama.
Yeah, it does. For sure. And then my final one is KK Slider from Animal Crossing.
The nudist dog.
I love KK Slider from the Animal Crossing series. And I have various stuffed renditions of KK. And it was great to have a little plastic figure of him as well.
All right. Yeah. Very cool. Great list. I will run down mine now. So I also... am going with the new Samus from Samus Returns. That one is excellent. Then I'm going to pick the Pikmin amiibo that came out just earlier this year. Earlier, I think I would have said Captain Olimar, but then this one came out, and I'm like, yeah, I think this one edges out Captain Olimar for all my Pikmin needs, because it's got, you know, like 5 Pikmin on there instead of 3. So again, it does this whole, you know, mini diorama thing that I really like so much. Mm. And I think it does just a little bit better with that one. I'm also going to pick a classic Nintendo character, and that is Rob, who is from that same three-pack as Duck Hunt duo. And it's just, you know, super detailed, and it's a great representation of that little character, and I love just putting him with my NES Classic, so I have Mini Rob and Mini NES sitting there together.
Nice. Now, do you also have the Famicom color Rob? I assume that you do.
I do, and I didn't think that was ever going to come out here, so that one I actually did import as well. I have to pay an exorbitant fee for it or anything. But yeah, I got that one because I was like, oh, well, that's never coming out here. And then it was released here as a single pack, but yes, I do have the Japanese version of that one.
All right.
Then I'm going to go with Lucina from the Smash Brothers line. It was just one of the most detailed amiibo from the Smash series, and I just really like her character as well. So you could almost pick out any of the Fire Emblem amiibo and say, you know, this one is really, really great. But, you know, I think she stands out above the rest just because it's a great combination of excellent detail and a really cool character. And then I will say this actually is my absolute number one favorite. I'm going with Super Mario Odyssey, Bowser in a Tux.
That's a great amiibo.
Because it's Bowser in a Tux.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
You know, I was gushing about this the other day when the amiibo came out and the game came out, and it's just got, you know, so much detail. It's a great look for Bowser, and it's a really useful amiibo as well. So yeah, that one has climbed to the top of my list. You know, three of these that I've brought up just came out this past year, so I get the feeling that like these amiibo just keep getting better and better and better. Maybe it's my imagination, but that's kind of the feeling I'm getting.
No, I think you're right. Because, you know, like the squishy Metroid and the Guardian from Breath of the Wild. Like,
yes,
there's been a lot of good stuff in Amiibo Land this year. And I really cannot wait to see what they've got in store for the future.
Yeah, yeah. Like you said, it was really hard to narrow this down just to five. So I will quickly. My next five, 6 through 10, would be Chibi-Robo, Pit from Smash, also the Duck Hunt duo, Mega Man because it's Mega Man, and also that Guardian you mentioned because it is huge and has those poseable arms.
Yes.
And that is a really, really nice touch. Yeah, that's a great one. Mm-hmm. So it's certainly in the runners-up for my my top amiibo choices. Now, I know you've said that you haven't used a lot of these in game, but you know, which ones would you say have the best functionality in them from what you've experienced?
I would say Breath of the Wild has the best, like, and part of that is just that's the game I've used them in the most, because
I certainly have.
Each day I basically run down all of my Zelda amiibos to try to get the special stuff.
Well, it's super useful because, you know, in this game, you are consuming so many items.
Yeah.
You know, you're always running out of, you know, food items, and you're running low on arrows, and your weapons are breaking. So instead of, you know, scouring the world trying to find these things, it's like, well, I can just scan my amiibo in tonight. And so it's like, okay, now I have a great new selection of weapons. I replenished my arrows. Yeah, I haven't done that in a long time, but with this new DLC, I think I'm probably going to start doing that again because it is super, super helpful.
Yeah, especially the arrows. Like, those are such a rare commodity, especially the special types like, you know, the bomb arrows or ice arrows. Like, you don't get those, and they're expensive to buy. So, yeah, I definitely, you know, want to load up on as many of those as possible.
Yep. Yeah. It's super, super handy. Another game though, that I think they have some really cool uses is in the 3DS version of Animal Crossing. And, you know, we already talked about Amiibo Festival and how terrible it was, but using them in the 3DS game is actually really, really great because you can get these exclusive villagers to show up in your game. And it's not even necessarily tied to the Animal Crossing amiibo. Like, you put in, you know, Zelda amiibo, and you can get Epona the horse showing up as a character in your Animal Crossing village. Or you can get a pig that's Ganon showing up in your Animal Crossing village. And that is fantastic, in my opinion.
Yeah, and some of those vehicles that they're in have Nintendo system stuff that you can have for your house, too, right? Like the Wii U and...
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, so that was... I scanned those in for that so that I could have a Wii U in my house.
Yeah, and there's even the ability to scan in the Monster Hunter amiibo and get stuff that way. And, you know, I was amazed that they had actually localized that and included that in the North American version, since, you know, those people never came out here. But yeah, that was a great reason to use those amiibo, was to get those exclusive characters and exclusive content. Mm-hmm. Are there any other games that really stood out to you as including great functionality?
Well, I really like Hyrule Warriors as well. And we talked about this a little bit before, where each amiibo that you scan gives you a unique item, and you can do it once per day. And if you have a lot of amiibo, you can just get a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I admit, even though I played a ton of Hyrule Warriors, I did not use the amiibo functionality a whole lot myself. Hmm. So it's interesting to see what I am missing out on there.
Yep.
So it's a lot like Breath of the Wild, where it's consumable items?
Yes.
Or is it... okay. Yeah. So it's used for upgrading your character and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There's still some content in that game I haven't played, so perhaps when I finally get around to some of that extra DLC I haven't tried, I can finally take advantage of the amiibo as well. But for me... You know, I think one of the best uses is in Super Mario Odyssey. You know, this Bowser doesn't just look cool, but it is probably what I think is the most useful amiibo they have ever released as far as its in-game abilities, and that is to help you track down those damn purple coins.
Yeah, that is useful. You know, I like that amiibo, but I think Princess Peach might edge that out for me in Mario Odyssey, just because it gives you... full hearts at any time.
Yeah, it gives you the boost, so it brings you up to 6 hearts.
You can keep reusing it on some of the harder challenges in that game. It's a way to cheat.
Yes.
But it's a nice function.
Yeah, I mean, I like Bowser because, you know, for me, I would pull it out when I have, like, you know, 97 out of 100 coins. I am going crazy trying to find those last few. But... all three of those amiibo are super useful. I mean, being able to get the health boost is incredibly helpful. And Mario makes you temporarily invincible.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kind of shied away from using those last two just because it does feel more like cheating. But it's incredibly useful. And if you want to get some great uses out of your amiibo and don't mind being a little bit of a cheater, you know, you get a huge amount of bang for your buck with those amiibo. They did not hold back. I mean, if you're going to, you know, spend the money to get these nice pieces of plastic, you should be able to take advantage of the cool features that go with them. So, you know, why not? You know, it's great.
Indeed. I'm sorry to say that my daughter has lost my Peach wedding amiibo somewhere the house.
Oh, so no.
I will need to find that. She was playing house with all of the wedding amiibos, and somehow the Peach one has gone missing. So.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Good thing they were sold separately, huh?
Yeah, that's true.
The other game I want to bring up when it comes to functionality is Metroid Samus Returns. Of course, using three of those Metroid amiibo would allow you to, you know, unlock the tanks, the energy tank and the missile tank and the aether tank, which you could not get through normal gameplay. And, you know, this almost seems like it goes, you know, too far in being useful, because it seems like kind of everybody should be able to have access to those. But still, there's no question they are super useful. They are great things to have. And so if you are an amiibo fan, you pick up the amiibo, you really do benefit in that game.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to pre-order that on Best Buy's site. I never saw that in that pack in store on a shelf.
Oh, I actually did find it a few places. That's surprising to hear, because... like, I know you have actually seen the Super NES Classic on store shelves, whereas I have still never seen one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found the Metroid and Samus 2-pack a few times. That sounds like it just got another reprint, so if you missed out on it before, it will be back out in circulation again soon, from what I'm hearing.
Hmm.
The Metroid, of course, did not give you one of these tanks, but it did let you see where the next Metroid was on the map, and that, again, could be super-duper helpful, much in that same way that Bowser is, where it's just like, okay, I'm lost, where do I go? Okay, here's what you should do. So that's handy to have.
Definitely.
As far as, you know, worst functionality, I think I would go with Fire Emblem Echoes, because just like... what you could do was super, super limited. You could only use them, you know, like a very limited amount of time. I think you only got like one turn when you'd bring in these bonus amiibo, and it just really didn't seem worth the effort.
Hmm.
I mean, that's the thing I like about Mario and Metroid, is that it's like, hey, I paid money for these things, now I'm going to reap the benefits. Whereas I really feel like you're kind of being held back and not really getting much of a reward in Fire Emblem Echoes.
Huh. Yeah, I would say the worst is Smash Brothers. Because I never really used them all that much, really. But, saving an AI character, mm-hmm. which I think was their only function, if I'm remembering correctly, but maybe not.
Yeah, pretty much, I think.
Yeah, it just seems kind of useless, especially for somebody like me who I'm mostly going to be playing that game by myself. I'm not taking a character over to mm-hmm. a friend's house or anything like that. So that functionality was completely lost on me.
Yeah, I can see you saying that. I mean, at least it's kind of, something. They were trying to do something interesting and unique, and you've got that many characters to work with. I imagine it would have been really difficult to come up with something that didn't feel like it was ripping people off. So I can certainly understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But I still feel like that was better than what they've done with some games. My least favorite amiibo functionality, I hate to say it, would be what they did with Mega Man in the Mega Man Legacy Collection on 3DS. And that is that it's used to unlock 10 new exclusive challenge levels.
Huh.
Which, on the surface, sounds fine, except you have to do it every single time you turn on the game.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, I guess they're probably like, oh, boy, I don't want someone to borrow this amiibo and, unlock this thing that you're supposed to, be using an amiibo for. But, if people did that, who cares, Don't worry about that. Just make it convenient and cool to use. So I certainly hope that when they are adding this amiibo functionality into the Switch versions of Mega Man Legacy Collection 1 and 2, that it's something much better than that.
And maybe they'll be in Mega Man 11 also.
Yeah, that'd be really nice.
Mm-hmm.
So earlier you were asking, what might the future of amiibo be? And that's sort of a very interesting question, because at this point there are no amiibo announced by Nintendo that aren't already out. The only amiibo that have yet to be released are the Shovel Knight amiibo, which of course are being made by a third party and not by Nintendo themselves. So, what does the future hold? The entire Toys to Life category, is sort of fallen by the wayside. There was no Spyro this year. They've canceled the Lego game. They've canceled the Disney game. So Nintendo and the amiibo is really the only place in town. And we are kind of left wondering, what are they going to do next? I mean, I think pretty much everything they released this year was fantastic. From Mario to Zelda to Pikmin to Fire Emblem, I've loved them all.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I certainly hope they keep it up. But, what's really going to happen? I don't know. Would you care to speculate a bit? What would you like to see, I guess, is the question. What do you want to see Nintendo do with the amiibo in 2018 and beyond, knowing that we don't know anything yet of what their plans are?
Yeah, even though we don't know anything, I would love to see them do more classic style amiibo. And I'm talking about...
Yeah, me too.
Stuff, more Mario poses from the classic games. Really anything from Super Mario Brothers 2 would be great. It'd be awesome to see a Wart amiibo or Birdo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they deserve some sort of representation. Yeah, they've been out of the spotlight too long.
Indeed. Yeah, I would love to see that stuff. If they ever bring back anything relating to Super Mario Brothers 2, and it seems like they are sort of disavowing any knowledge that there was Super Mario Brothers 2. But if they do, I'd love to see amiibo based on those, because those characters and that game is one of my favorites of all time, and it would be fantastic mm-hmm. to have toys of that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree. I think that would be great. And we got this fantastic line of a 30th anniversary Zelda amiibo, and there's really no reason they shouldn't be applying that more to Mario. We got the cool Pixel Marios,
yep.
But they haven't really done anything beyond that. And yeah, they could, totally dig into their back catalog and do that same thing with Mario. Do the Mario 2 characters, do, Raccoon Mario from Mario 3, a Cape Mario from Mario World, Metal Mario, Flood Mario, Cat Mario, and all kinds of things from throughout the character's history.
Indeed. Or they could do Mario Kart amiibos too.
Yeah.
I'd buy the heck out of those. If they do Mario Kart 9, I hope they have amiibo with those.
That'd be fantastic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'd also be up for some new Mario Odyssey amiibo. And I think I've touched this a little bit on the show before. And I also was talking to a listener over email. We discussed this a little bit. I believe one of his suggestions was a T-Rex with a mustache.
That would be awesome.
And that would be just having a whole line of, you know, the bad guys possessed by Mario, have the mustache T-Rex, have a mustache Goomba stack, have a mustache Bullet Bill. All those would be amazing.
Yep.
And the fact they haven't just done Mario with Cappy is kind of mystifying. I figure that one's got to happen eventually, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
And for me personally, I would like to see all of the Brutals get represented as well, even though opinions on them seem to be mixed.
Oh, not the Brutals. Why couldn't they have brought back Wart instead?
But speaking of Mario characters that need to get amiibo representation, all seven Koopalings.
Yes.
Yeah, they need to be in there somewhere.
What about the Mario Maker amiibo, the construction worker amiibo?
Oh, yeah, yeah, nice. That would be awesome.
Yeah, and maybe if they do Mario Maker for Switch, we'll see that.
Yeah, yeah, if they did a Mario Maker 2, that would be really, really cool. I did just see in the store just a regular action figure of Mario in that costume, and I almost bought it because it looks pretty darn cool.
Heck yeah.
I'm like, no, I should just wait until they do an amiibo or some other, you know, high-end collectible like this, because it is a pretty neat look for that character.
Definitely.
But going back to what you were saying, though, about, you know, bringing back just classic Nintendo characters, and this is also probably something we've talked about on the show before, is I want to see them, like going back even further and deeper than Mario 2 and like giving us representations of, you know, essentially what were some of the trophies, you know, in Smash Brothers. So like giving us, you know, the Excitebike rider or even, you know, green haired guy and blue haired guy from Urban Champion. I mean, I hate Urban Champion, but if they did an amiibo of those guys punching each other, I would totally buy that.
I would
totally buy an amiibo of, you know, a gangster holding up his zapper in Hogan's Alley. I would totally buy Mike Jones from Star Tropics. And don't even get me started on, you know, the Amazon and Ken Korn Karn and Starman from Pro Wrestling, because, of course, I would buy all those.
Definitely. I'm right there with you.
Yeah, that would be the ultimate for me. And then I think there's also plenty of room for third parties to get in on the action. And, you know, with this being the big Mega Man anniversary, I think that Capcom is sitting on, like, a whole bunch of money to be made if they were to make their own Mega Man line of amiibo.
Not even just Mega Man, Street Fighter, with that new game that's coming out in May.
Yeah, 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 they could do that too. Mm-hmm. But Mega Man is, of course, near and dear to my heart, and, you know, I feel like that would be a little easier maybe than doing Street Fighter, because it'd be so easy to focus in on some of the core characters. You know, you could do Mega Man, Proto Man, Roll, Bass, Rush, and Dr. Wily. That's a nice set of six there.
Sure.
Or, you know, they could, you know, pick out you know, Mega Man X and Zero and Sigma from the X series. Or they could go the way that Nintendo did with Zelda and do all the different Mega Mans throughout the ages. So they could have you know, Mega Man from Battle Network, the Star Force Mega Man, Mega Man Volnutt from Mega Man 64, Mega Man Zero, and, you know, I think that those would probably sell pretty well.
I think you're right.
For that matter, I think that Sega could probably do something with a Sonic line. And, you know, it's crazy enough that we have one Sonic amiibo from Smash, but, you know, they could do Tails and Amy and Knuckles and Dr. Robotnik, a.k.a. Eggman. Mm-hmm. Heck, I'd even buy a Big the Cat amiibo.
So would I. Especially Big the Cat.
Froggy, he'd probably need to be included with Big. I wouldn't want to buy him separately. But yeah, I'm totally down with that otherwise.
Me too.
And then, you know, I'm kind of a little sad that with the release of Yooka-Laylee this week, there is not a Yooka-Laylee amiibo. You know, I feel like that would have been a perfect fit for the amiibo lineup.
Yeah, you're right. That's a curious omission.
I mean, it is third party. It's not getting a physical release yet, so it's not that weird. But I just feel like it would have been a perfect fit and would look great on the shelf along with you know, all those other Nintendo characters. That aesthetic really does work well with the Nintendo universe.
Definitely.
Now, did you see the recent interview in Famitsu where Capcom revealed they were working on a Resident Evil amiibo?
Really? I did not see that.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't 100% swear it was Famitsu, but I know I read this interview and it was definitely a thing. And obviously you can see why they didn't do it, because you're trying to sell you know, these plastic figurines to kids of an M-rated game. So it's probably, you know, not the best idea.
True.
But for me, of course, I would buy the whole lot. I'd buy Chris and Jill, and I'd buy a Jill sandwich for that matter. I'd buy Chainsaw Guy. Works for me. Gore and all.
Huh.
Is there anything else that you would like to see from the future of Amiibo?
Not that I can think of. I just want Amiibo for really any Nintendo first-party game. Like, they can do Amiibo for anything, and I would probably buy it.
I tend to agree. I mean, those ones we talked about are kind of, you know, my top picks. Those would be my favorites. But I would pretty much be happy with anything. But there is one that I kind of hope they do not do, and that is Pokemon. Because that would spell the end of everything.
That would be too easy, and also you would be broke.
Right. I mean, I'm already pretty broke with what I've spent on Amiibo so far, but you know, it's like, where do they start? Where do they end? Well, I guess they start with the starters and another version of Pikachu, but there are just so many they could do. I mean, there's how many Pokemon now? 700 or something?
At least,
and yeah. It's like, man, they could just keep making those and keep making those until I am, you know, living in a gutter somewhere with nothing but my Amiibo collection. So it would be amazing.
Well, they did already do, Tomy did toys of all of the, I'm not sure if they continued it, but originally,
oh, yes.
Back in the Game Boy day and Game Boy Color and Game Boy Advance days,
right,
they were
right.
doing a whole line of those. So
yeah, I remember the last time I went to Japan, you know, seeing those in the Pokemon Center they have over there, you know, and yeah, I certainly have seen those with my very own eyes, and they could do that exact same thing with Amiibo if they wanted to. I mean, that's the thing, is they could make Amiibo for every single Pokemon, and they would probably sell like wildfire, and so I am, you know, kind of glad they have not done that, because it is a rabbit hole that I probably should not ever, ever consider going down.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's been lots of cool Amiibo so far. I think there's still lots of potential in the line. And you know, even though the market is sort of drying up for some of the competition, I think the power of Nintendo's characters, the power of Nintendo's brands, and the fact that you can use one of these things in so many games really gives them the edge. We can see it in the stores. You know, they are kind of the leading name and the sole survivor, it might be, in the Toys to Life category.
Except for the Animal Crossing Amiibo. You can get those super cheap.
Those will probably, you know, still be around along with cockroaches at the end of the world. Those probably aren't going away anytime soon.
I think that's the cautionary tale, that you can't make Amiibo of anything and have them sell in huge numbers.
That's true.
The Amiibo that they do make have to be really, really good, like you know, the Metroid Amiibo that they've done and the Mario Wedding Amiibo. Like, those are really top-notch, and I think they're even more expensive than the original Smash Brothers Amiibo. They've sort of gotten a little pricier.
The Breath of the Wild ones, anyway.
But as long as the quality's up, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I mean, as long as they keep making good stuff, I will definitely keep buying, and hopefully everybody else will as well.
Yep.
All right, and with that said, I do believe that brings this big topic to a close, which means it's time for us to wrap up this episode.
All right.
However, before we go, we have time for one more thing. And of course, that is a dramatic reading. Once again, we are continuing the adventures of Captain Nintendo from the pages of Nintendo Power Magazine, Volume 4. Previously, an explosion at Nintendo headquarters caused Brett Randles to be transformed into Captain Nintendo, but it also caused video game baddies Mother Brain and Ganon to come to life in the real world. Now, Captain Nintendo, his friends, and The Legend of Zelda's Link are desperately trying to find a way to defeat the villains, and it may all hinge on the receptionist's letter opener. And now, the saga continues. Suddenly, Link fell back against a wall. The raging invisible Ganon had landed a substantial blow of his own, a blow that had knocked the wind out of Link. Captain Nintendo felt it too, since he was directly maintaining Link's life support to this world. Out of nowhere came a pair of flying fireballs straight toward Link. With his legendary lightning-fast reflexes, he struck the fiery spheres. As the sword connected with the fireballs, Ganon again became momentarily visible and then vanished. Two more fireballs hit Link. Captain Nintendo could feel his energy draining, though Link remained standing. "He's too close to Mother Brain," said the captain. "We've got to separate them, Link. Draw him outside while I get..." Flume! Two more fireballs sped between the captain and Link, just missing them. Link raced toward the door and outside into the parking lot, followed by another pair of fireballs, almost clipping his heels. The door then seemed to open by itself, and Gen's distinctive odor trailed outside. He was pursuing Link. Captain Nintendo bounded to the reception desk and grabbed the silver letter opener. "Careful. It's sharp," cautioned Morgana. And that's where we are ending this tale today.
Don't run with letter openers, kids.
Are you just on the edge of your seat? Aren't you just wondering what's going to happen now that he's got that very sharp letter opener? Don't just go, "Ooh, I can't wait to see what happens next."
It probably glints in the light when he raises it above his head. Maybe. Who knows?
We don't know. We'll find out when this exciting tale continues in an upcoming episode.
All right.
For now, however, that takes care of the show for this week. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter at ChrisTheHoff, and you can find CJ at SuperPack, with a C. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and of course, if you like the podcast, it would be great if you told your friends about us. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Chris Johnston,
keep playing with power,
and my underwater crush, Mipha,
I must go.
We will see you next time.